Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Beautiful Struggle podcast.
Take three.
Episode two. Take three. Actually, take three, full transparency, because we done messed this up three times beforehand. I'm your host, Octavius A. Newman, and I'm here with Marcus Myers. Tell him, what's up, Marcus?
What up?
Tell him what's up. You're about to go to take four. No, but seriously, Marcus Myers is on the show because he's an amazing musician, amazing drummer, amazing composer. And I wanted to have him come on and tell his origin story. So I'm going to let him tell you a little bit about what he does. Tell the people what you do exactly.
All right. So right now, I have this band called Ode to Omni, 9-piece band.
Dang.
Yes. That's a lot of people, man.
That's a lot of pieces.
That's a lot of
pieces. A lot of moving parts.
Right. 9-piece band. Mm-hmm. And kind of the coolness about the band is it doesn't stick to one genre.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many musical people might be like, I don't know, that doesn't seem focused. But I think there's something beautiful about not sticking to just one thing.
Mm-hmm. So how would you describe the band? For people who've not heard. If you haven't heard, you should go look up Ode to Omni on iTunes.
That's a great plug.
But how would you describe it for someone who has no clue, never heard of Ode to Omni?
It's a multi-genre band that has jazz idioms. So everything is pretty much
jazz idioms. Google it.
Come on now. I probably said it wrong. I probably used it. But it's rooted in jazz. So, for example, we'll take a singer, songwriter, song and write true to the form, but also at the same time, it'll have jazz orientation. Like, it'll be rooted in jazz, meaning improvisation.
Okay. So, you guys improv beforehand and then you like work the improv in, or?
No. I usually, when I write, I usually don't write with a lot in mind. If I feel like, man, this next song I want to write is more of a folky song, I will write a folky song.
Okay.
And then somehow just think, well, how can I make this different? How can I make this? Or sometimes let me just leave it the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the beauty about the band. I mean, it can be anything. It can be anything that it can be.
Right.
Without pigeonholing it to like being a certain sound or something like that.
So that's dope. So it really sounds like you kind of go where the inspiration takes you.
Right.
And I would assume that there's probably a lot that's going into actually getting you to this point. So why don't you take us back to the beginning of where your initial inspiration started? You can tell us like where you're from, what planet you're from. Where'd you start out?
I'm from that good planet of DC.
Okay.
Chocolate City.
Dang.
Huh?
Is that what they call it out there in the streets? I was unaware of that. Okay, I need to get my Google on.
I don't even know why they call it the Chocolate City. But I'm from D.C.
So you were born there?
Born there, raised in Philly.
So you were born, how long were you in D.C. before you came?
Probably like 3 years.
Okay. And what was home like?
Home was great.
Mom and dad?
No, unfortunately, I had dad for a short period of time on the side of heaven. He passed away when I was probably like 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
So then it just became me and my mother.
Okay. Any siblings?
No.
Oh, so you,
I'm the
it was
only
all
child.
About you.
It's all, yeah, you smile. Yeah, it was all about me and, you know, if something got broke, it was on me.
Oh yeah.
Nobody else broke it.
Yeah, you can't blame nobody
except
all you can do is lie. Don't get caught in one of those.
Right.
Consequences and repercussions.
Right. You're going to feel it.
Right.
But I grew up in a normal household. I mean, my mom worked extremely. It's almost like the stories you hear.
Okay.
Single parent household. Mom works hard.
Mm.
Try to keep her son out of the hood. Gives him the things that she thinks he should have. Keeps him in church.
Mm-hmm. So church was a big part.
Church was paramount. You had no choice.
So church was not optional. It was
church,
you brush your teeth and you go to church.
Right. Every Sunday. You knew that you were going to church.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know what you're gonna do for your birthday. But if it was, but it was on
birthday
Sunday,
might come and go.
Yeah,
but you know you're gonna be at on Sunday. Church. Okay, I
tomorrow's
get that.
Not promised, but if it's Sunday, you're going to church.
Okay, got it. So for sure, you was gonna be at church. 100%.
Right, 100%.
Now, what was that like? Now, was mom going to church with you, or was mom sending you to church?
No, mom was coming to church with me. Mom was always active in church.
Okay,
she's been an usher for years.
Oh. So she had the white gloves on and everything.
Give me your gum.
No chewing gum in the service. What's wrong with you, boy?
Right.
Better take that hat off, too.
Right.
Okay, all right. That. She was that person.
Yes. Yes.
So did you like church?
You know what? I have to say I did. I loved church. It was interesting. I mean, as a little kid, I always knew I wanted to be a drummer.
Okay, so that's a, like, and at that, what age did that kick in?
You know how our moms have stories. Like, but she said just one morning I woke up, and I probably was like around 3 to 5, and I just said I wanted to play drums.
We was watching Muppet Babies, and you saw Animal or something right. like that? Like, where'd that come from?
She just said that simple. Like, I went, and I just said, hey, I want to play drums, and I took some pots out of the, you know, I'm surprised you let me do this. I took some pots, and I just started. Like,
go ahead and encourage them.
Beating on them.
Uh-huh.
And I set up I remember that. I set up a little makeshift drum set on the kitchen floor. You couldn't tell me anything.
Now, where did you see that? Because you don't just wake
church.
Up in the morning. Okay, that's the
connection. See, that's the correlation.
Okay.
It's church, and I think church, for me, especially at my church that I go to, I still go there.
Oh, so this is you go to the same church?
I go to the same church.
Got it.
Okay. The drummer at the church when I was a kid was the best.
Yeah.
People used to ask me, like, especially my freshman year in college, like, what's your inspirations or who are your inspirations? And I would say this cat's name, Jason White. I mean, that was Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, pay-per-view for me. Okay. I mean, killing. Absolutely killing. Like, me, I used to sit on the front row of the church, close to him, with drumsticks, and emulate every single thing he was doing.
Okay, so that was, like, the training ground, and he didn't even know he was training you.
He didn't even know he was training me.
So you was just over there, Daniel's son, Mr. Miyagi.
Right, sweating out my
making all kinds of noise, embarrassing your mom.
And then you
put the drumsticks down and listen to the sermon.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So you was air drumming away.
I was number one air drummer.
So at what point did it, like, go from air drumming to actual? Did my mom buy you a set? Did you just?
Yeah.
What happened?
Mom bought me the stereotypical starter set.
Mm-hmm. What age was this?
3 drums. Probably like around 5 or 6.
So you got 3 years of straight air drum training.
Yeah. And it had some wood blocks.
There you go. Hey, so listen, if you want to learn anything, you need 3 straight years of air drum training. And you got to get some pots and pans.
That's the regiment.
You got to put in your rudiments.
That's why kids have it too easy these days.
They got YouTube. I had YouTube. I had the front pew. That's all I had.
Week after week. No, but I had the drum set, the 3-piece drum set.
So what is the 3-piece drum set?
The 3-piece is, for all the drummers that know it, the 3-piece drum set is highly made out of plastic, which is not good for drums. But it's the starter. So you have your bass drum, you have your snare, and you have your tom, and you have the cymbal that sticks up in the middle, right? The snare and the tom are all connected together on top of the bass drum.
Uh-huh.
So literally, if you pick up your bass drum,
your whole kit
with you.
Uh-huh.
And I remember after church, I used to go in on that little kit for hours.
No kind of, like, no one was encouraging you, telling you. You were just doing it.
I was just doing it.
Because you wanted to.
Man, the way I explain it, and not to be all deep, it was just burning, I wouldn't even say burning, because I was a kid. I would say, sounds like a rash, but I was...
burning. I was trying to deal with, and I was just beating the drums until it went away.
No, it was just... It's like, as a little kid, you have a lot of interest, right? That's cool, and that's not cool, and this one, to me, was more than an interest.
Mm-hmm.
This one, God had a plan for it, and I didn't know. But I knew it was something more than just, I want to do karate one year.
Mm.
Because I literally would cry if I couldn't play drums.
Mm-hmm.
I literally took my sticks with me everywhere. I was tearing up my mom's green Taurus in the back. Yeah. I think my mom used to sleep with drumsticks.
Are you serious?
Right. At a little age. Nobody teaches you that. So, I don't know what it was. I do believe it's a gift, but that's how it started. I was more tenacious probably at a younger age than I am now. Really? I don't know where it started from, but it was just something clicked. Mm-hmm. And I loved it.
That's amazing. Like that's a level of dedication that I don't even, you know, I can't think. I mean, I've been dedicated. Well, that's not true. I've been dedicated with things. But do you think that there was a level of just like youthful zeal? Like that kind of like when you're little, you're like, you can be anything. You can be the president of the United States. Right. You can be an astronaut. You can be a drummer. And you kind of just have, well, what's to stop me? If I try hard enough, then I can be anything.
You didn't have this limit. Mm. And I think as a little kid, there's this innocence that they're blessed with. Mm. That knows no boundaries. Mm. They don't know limits. They get taught limits. Hmm. They don't know limits. So
interesting.
I mean, think about it. Kids' imaginations are crazy. Just think about the things you imagine
right.
as a young kid.
Yeah.
You probably look back at yourself, it's like, what?
Wow, I was wilding out.
Right. But if you didn't grow up in this world that kind of traced the outside line for you and said, mm-hmm. oh, this is where you color mm-hmm. in right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you probably still would have a better imagination.
Yeah. I think there's a level of that that's healthy, but then there's also a level of that that is, you know, kind of forced upon you. It's like, oh, put that stuff down, cut it out, get a real job.
Get a real job.
You know, mm-hmm. be serious. You know, and I think it's unfortunate that a lot of artists have to deal with that. They kind of feel that pressure to get a real job. Now, I don't think Marcus or I are advocating that you shouldn't, you know, have a place to live, put clothes on your back.
That's important.
Food in your stomach.
Yes.
If you are married men and women and you got children, I want to hit
children. Don't let this podcast inspire you to do something foolish.
Ain't nobody telling you, hey, Marcus said I need to sleep my drumsticks, bae.
No,
you
know what I didn't say that.
Listen, Junior, I got to make this career work. That's not what we saying. But there is a level of like, I've heard Kevin Smith say it, who's a podcaster that I listen to. He has a reasonable amount of unreasonability. Just kind of like this why not mentality.
Right.
Why not? Why can't I?
Right.
And I think like you're pointing out, little kids have that, and there is a certain point. There's a healthy amount that's like, okay.
There's a time and a place.
There's wisdom.
Yes.
But then, as a creative, you got to be able to, like, just let your mind kind of wander and wonder.
You have to. You have to create that safe place for that child. And that's what it was for me at home. It was a safe place.
And was mom encouraging? Was she?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She was encouraging, but also strict.
Tell me about that.
So
strict moms are fun stories. Yeah,
right. As I got older, and my mom saw that I had a talent for it, mm-hmm. a gift. And then she sought out for me to have some lessons. Mm.
How long were you training by yourself before you started getting lessons?
Not too long. I'm going to say about 7-8 years.
Not too long?
Seven, eight years? I wasn't, you know.
You know, there's some people who haven't done anything for 7-8 years.
That's true.
Like, I never they haven't even trained with a coach in anything for 7-8 years.
I mean, I wouldn't call it training. I would say aggressively pursuing mm-hmm. an interest mm-hmm. For, you know, until I was like 7 or 8. And then we went to go, you know, see if I can get some lessons. Mm. And then when I got lessons, it was pretty funny. The guy came out and he told my mom, like, you know, he can't even reach the pedals. Right. And I'm 8, like 8 or 10 or something like that.
Right.
He can't reach the pedals. So my mom was like,
lower your seat down or
not? Nah, man, it was low. I think I was.
You had the joint at the bottom? Your feet was dangling.
I think we had the last peg.
Oh, man.
And my mom, you know, my mom is a very persistent and tenacious woman. She was like, no, give him a chance. Give him a try. You know, go back in there.
She basically disciplined your teacher. Didn't I pay for this?
Right.
You're going to teach my son how to play these drums. I know that.
So he came back in and I played something for him. And the look on his face was like, wow. Now, I can tell you now, what I played for him probably wasn't anything mm-hmm. amazing, but he was like, wow. He was just, and from that point on, I started to train with him. So the strictness about my mom, but also the nourishment of my gift was she was very involved. It was mm-hmm. almost like if you had a dad and you played football mm-hmm. and he was getting you ready. Like, you playing Pop Warner, right. But your dad's like, we going out to the field today.
Right, you're like, can I sleep?
Right.
Nah.
Oh, Saturday, you going out to the field today. Uh-huh. And they're training you as if you're a grown man.
Really? So your mom was training you as if you was a grown right. man?
My mom was training me not for what I was, but for what I was going to be.
So she saw...
She saw it.
She saw potential in you, and she nurtured that.
Like, literally, Marcus, did you practice today?
Mm.
Like, did you practice today?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no. It's like, why didn't you practice today? So I would get up, 1 hour, 2 hours, uh-huh. practice. Okay. Marcus, I didn't hear you practice today.
Huh.
Did you practice? All right. Because she knew I liked it.
Right.
She knew I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But the work ethic wasn't there because that's something that has to be learned.
Hmm. So you had the interest, but you didn't have the work ethic.
Right.
Okay. What percentage, if you had to guess, not guess, how much? What percentage do you think was work ethic, learned work ethic, and what percentage was like God-given raw talent?
Ooh, that's a good question. I want to say, I'm going to break the number scales here.
Okay.
100%.
Get your math right.
Right.
Because right. you're already messing up. It's 100% and 25. No, it don't work.
100% God-given. 100% work ethic.
Yeah, when you bring God in, you just mess the whole scale.
Come on, man. Because there's no way, like looking back at it now, like there's people who take drum lessons that struggle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just came natural.
Mm-hmm.
It just came natural. There was no supplement to take, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it just came natural. And the work ethic came, and I think it's still coming after years and years of just... Where do you want to go next, Marcus?
Mm.
There's a new level of work ethic you have to apply to get there.
So was there ever a point where you were like, I'm sick of this? Like, or was there ever a part where you found yourself banging your head against the wall to figure this thing out? Like, you know, just like that
right.
plateau that you reached, did you ever get to a point like that?
You know what's interesting?
It's like, actually, no. I've never reached the plateau.
That's so arrogant.
I've never reached the plateau.
And it's kind of disrespectful you're asking that.
And when
that.
People say that to me, I don't understand it. I'm confused.
Have you reached a plateau?
I can't relate.
No. Yes. The interesting thing is, I haven't experienced that feeling until I got to college.
Hmm. So you go backtrack
mm-hmm.
from D.C., Chocolate City,
to Philly.
Front row. Watching, what's his name play?
Jason
play. Air drum champion. 3 years.
Undefeated
air drum champion. Feet can't touch the pedals. You know, you start training.
Right.
And then we get to, so you pretty much, that's what it's looking like until you got to college, you said.
Right. And then in between that, to have some fill-in, it was like another person who was instrumental and still instrumental to my work ethic. Is my youth pastor, who was actually the praise and worship leader at my church, and still currently is praise and worship leader at my church. When I first got on the drums, because I was height deficient.
Even, see there? You got to find ways to overcome.
I would get on the drums when there was no one around.
Mm.
When the main drummer wasn't there, when the secondary drummer wasn't there, and when the third string wasn't there.
Oh, dang.
Right, I was that low.
Man.
I got in there, and when the drummers would show up and I was playing mid-song, they would kick me off.
All right. That's enough.
So you got to imagine, like, as a little kid, I didn't care.
Mm.
That's how bad I wanted it.
Right.
Until I became, like, a teenager.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I'm playing drums. I'm playing my heart out in church.
Right.
And I'm thinking, I got it this time.
Wait, is this a tryout?
No, this is not. This is during the service.
you play. They gonna feel me on this one.
I'm playing. I see the drummer from the corner of my eye. He's coming up. The main drummer.
Right.
Comes up. I'm playing the middle of service.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he's coming up to kick me off.
Wait, the culture is.
I won't say the culture, but
it bowls like, ayo, that's enough.
No, it was more so
like jumping in.
If you're butchering the service, right? See, in my mind, I'm like, I'm doing it.
You're giving them work. I'm giving them work. They about to feel the Holy Spirit on this one.
Right now, they about to say, the Holy Spirit's telling me to get the other drugs. So, right. It's kind of like, and I don't see anything wrong with that now. Because I believe in excellence.
Okay, yeah.
So, if I got up there, I should have been prepared.
Right.
But
so you weren't prepared this day, and he's walking his way up.
I wasn't prepared a couple times. So he's walking up. It's a long walk. Everybody can see him.
Oh, no.
He comes up.
You see what the corner is?
Right. He comes up. And he's shaking his head like, man, I really don't want to do it to you. He won't need to come. What? Bro, I threw my sticks. I threw my sticks on the snare, but it rolled off the snare. It rolled off the snare and hit the floor. So I get up all mad right during service. He's trying to look for the sticks on the floor. And I sit in the choir stand and I cried my eyes out.
Oh, God.
In front of the whole church. Amen.
That was a beautiful struggle.
That was a turning point in my life.
That was Crime Alley. That was the point where you were like, this is it.
This is it. And you know what? This is how I knew I was mad. I cried. And I didn't care who saw me. I didn't take
that's
any.
That's a real cry. That's the real one. That's the one where you don't care.
I ain't asked for no tissues. Nobody say. I said, I want everybody to see this. Nobody really paid attention to But it was funny.
That's I know that cry.
Oh, yeah.
That cry. That's the one where you just is. It's like it's touched you so deeply that being cute and being tough, you don't care about none of that. None of those things matter.
I had an experience.
Right.
And I sat there, and on that day, this was the interesting thing about it. Mm-hmm. No matter how much I felt like I was like not up to the par, it made me go home and work harder on it. Mm-hmm. There was something about, and my mom used to say to me, she's just like, well, next time, you know, make sure you have that song down pat. Mm. You know, make sure you, and it was encouraging.
So mom was just right there like, okay, we're going to get them.
Right, right.
And that was just like, that was home training.
That was home training. It was like, that's how I got this kind of like tenacious, just.
I'm
going to figure this out. Right, because my mom was always like, well, next time, you know. Or my mom has a sense of humor. So she'd be like, you want to practice, you get tired of being embarrassed.
Yeah, that you off. That's mom. I bet you practice now, won't you? Go up there and somebody kick you off them drums. Right. Remember this next time you want to sit down
and cry. And
I don't know why you over there crying. Should have been practicing what I told you to. I ain't gonna do this. She's like, you know, get in this car and go home. Yo, man, I can relate I grew up in a similar household with my mother where my mother would always say things to me like, where there's a will, there's a way. Mm-hmm. My mother, I never once saw my mother, oh no, what are we going to do? Oh my God.
Right,
I've never seen her like that.
Right.
Even in the worst situations,
right.
She's always been like, okay, what do we do now?
Right.
Okay, how do we figure this out? Okay, and my mother was always telling me things like, you know, well, you can figure it out. I didn't say it was going to be easy, but you can figure this out.
Right.
You know, she didn't understand, like, when I would tell her my schoolwork is hard, she would never debate whether the work was hard. Mm-hmm. She would debate whether I was working hard.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Wow, yeah.
It's like something being hard to her was like, okay, and?
Right.
Like, why are you telling me it's hard? Like, why are you telling me that, like, that's supposed to, like, move me. Things being difficult are the way the world works, Octavius.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
that's just normal.
Right.
What you've got to do is work harder. So
that's good.
My mother was loving. You know, I could cry around her. I could tell her how things were difficult and I had problems with my friends. And she was always a place where she was like, I love you, but she never just accepted it's hard, so I quit.
Right.
Like, That was just like, it got to the point where I could see my mom. I don't know if this is really my mom or a caricature of my mom. She would almost like not even entertain it.
Wow. Yeah.
She'd be like, oh, Octavia, come on. Like, okay. I remember my mom saying, when you stop crying.
Right.
When you calm down, we'll have a conversation. Because her thing is, you can feel, you can be sad.
Right.
You can go through all that. That's all. Yes. Have that moment.
Have the moment.
But we're going to come back.
Right.
And we're going to get back to work.
Yeah.
And that has, I think that really has paid dividends in my life, because there's plenty of difficult, really, really rough stuff that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And not just being creative in relationships, in life.
Right.
In jobs.
Right.
You know, and just getting your, just the simplicity of getting your feelings hurt. You thought something was going to happen.
Didn't happen.
It don't happen the way you thought it was gonna happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my mother was never like, shut up, quit that crying.
Right.
It's like, no, you get to cry.
But then what are we gonna do about it?
We gonna have a conversation about
right.
Now what are we gonna do?
Right.
So I can really relate to you about that's right. Dope. That's dope to have that kind of like, especially, and you know what? I mean, especially not having a father around.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like that's
tough.
I mean, I have no clue what it's like.
That's tough.
To be my mother raising me. You don't know how to be no man.
Right.
You know?
Right. So, that's that blows my mind.
Yeah.
That blows my mind. Because my mom gave me just the right amount of, like, you know what? My mom was very crucial and, like, just very smart. In the fact that she acknowledged that she couldn't raise a man.
Mm.
She could raise a human.
Mm-hmm.
She could raise me, you know, in the Lord. But she's always surrounded me with older, great men.
Mm-hmm. So she was intentional about forming you spiritually by going to church. She was intentional about encouraging and kind of like, you know, helping like develop your artistry,
right.
But at the same time, she saw holistically, you know, manhood's important. You need to be around some men.
Right. And anytime there was like a group function for young men at the church, I was there.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime, like, you know, somebody wanted to take me out and, you know, she trusts the character, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She's like, yeah, sure. Just so I can have that one-on-one time. And anytime my uncles wanted to reach out, sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's funny. Like, I mean, even as you guys listen to this podcast, this is stuff I didn't know about Marcus. And that's part of the reason why we have these podcasts to, you know, I relate to a lot of these things. Same
You're my
thing.
Brother.
Huh?
You might be my brother.
What?
You might have the same childhood.
Uh-oh.
What happened?
We're not going to talk about it.
All right.
See, we're not going to go that far. But for real, I mean, that's very similar to my upbringing. Like, my mother saw to it that she really encouraged and helped facilitate the things that I was interested in. She made sure I went to church. She would be like, you going to church. Even if she sent me to church, like I remember walking to church by myself. I remember I remember going to church with my godmother. Like, she was intentional about it, but she was also intentional about making sure that I had relationships with men that, mm-hmm. you know, were positive examples of manhood.
Right.
And
right.
I just think God blessed me. Even when I was in high school, when I was in college, coaches and stuff like that, I always had examples of that. So it sounds like this all collectively came together.
Without a doubt.
Now, do you feel like there was anything missing in your kind of like, as you look back on your story, you look back, you know, we're kind of reminiscing on like, I was born here, this happened. Is there anything you're like, man, I didn't have this, but I wish I did. Or this was hard. It was hard because I didn't have this.
I think I've never wanted for anything, but I think it's just something about having your biological father there that no matter how many cool football coaches you have.
Yeah.
How many cool uncles you have, or how many cool things you do, or who you look up to, if your pastor's really cool, which my pastor is really cool. there's something about having the male presence inside your house. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes I look back and just say, I would just love to call my man, my pops, and just be like, what up, old man?
Right.
I would just love to do that.
Yeah.
Come through. Let's watch a Sunday game together.
Right.
Or just to hear him say, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
You know, or to say like, okay, teach me how to tie a tie. Mm-hmm. I learned off YouTube.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? So it's just those things that you wish you could have with your father. Mm. That some, I would say some of them sound stereotypical just because, you know.
Yeah.
That the American life.
Sure.
But also that are things that you, how God built us, how the family should be.
Right. Right.
I mean, if you don't have one piece of the puzzle for a complete family, something feels off.
Yeah. Yeah, I can relate.
Quite naturally. Something
I grew
just
with just my
off.
Mom, too.
Yeah.
So I didn't know who my father was. And even as I'm older, and I met him, but it's like, right. You know, I barely remember it.
Right.
You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right.
And very similarly, I grew up not really, because my mom did a good job of surrounding me around
mm-hmm.
all these awesome family members.
Right.
You know, aunts that really ain't blood. You know,
right,
aunt
right,
so-and-so
right.
and godmother such-and-such.
Right.
You know what I mean? Uncle this and that. And, you know, people who aren't really blood, but they might as well be.
Right.
But it's not till now that I'm an adult that I'm really, really seeing what part that's played. A father not being there, what part that that's played.
It's
as much as I'm appreciative of my mother right. and what God has done to provide,
right.
there's a piece that you do feel, that I do feel now that's just like, you know, you want, you know, I think every son wants to hear their dad say, hey, good job, son.
That's my boy.
Wait, that's my son right there.
That's me right there, yeah.
You know, and even as you, even creatively, it's great to hear my mom. I spoke to my mom today. She said, I just want to tell you how proud I am of you.
Right.
And that's fantastic. Like, I love that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know? But I also believe that things are intentional. Things are purposeful and things are the way they're supposed to be. So, you know, as much as I would like to say, you know, I wish my father was around, I also do trust that, you know, God's doing things for my good and his glory.
And that's the interesting thing that you said that, because that just brought up a point in my heart of just saying, now because we don't have fathers, we see the importance of the father's
yeah.
role.
Yeah.
And I'm a little ways off to being married.
Mm-hmm.
You're married.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure if you and your wife discuss having kids, you know exactly what father you want to be. Like, you may not know what that looks like entirely,
right.
but you have like this desire of being,
oh,
like,
yeah.
I want to be a great father.
Yes.
Because I've never had one.
Mm-hmm.
And the craziest thing is, God gets glory out of every single thing. My dad died from an unfortunate event.
Mm-hmm.
If my dad was still living, I could still be in D.C.
Yeah. My mother said a similar thing to me. She's like, you know what? If your father was involved, I might not have been able to do this. I might not have been able to do that.
And we wouldn't be talking right now.
Maybe not, yeah.
So God definitely has this way of like, he predestined us. Like, Octavius and Marcus, they have to meet.
Mm-hmm.
There's some things I want them to do for me.
Mm.
And through all this chaotic, you know, this chaotic ordeal, not that I'm trying to take people out of here or make them
right.
hurt.
Right.
But I'm going to make it all work together.
Yeah.
And that's the most amazing thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that your music, like what kind of effect do you feel like your music gives people? What kind of feeling do you want them to get from it?
Wow, that's a good question.
Because we kind of talked about your past. You kind of took me up to college. Did you tell the story that the difficult part you had in college?
College was just college. And what I mean by that is I came from being the one guy in church, the one guy in high school that was really good at music,
mm-hmm.
to being a number.
One of many.
One of many.
Mm.
It's kind of like the X-Men.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you go to this, you're a mutant, you out here just doing some crazy stuff.
Right.
you go to the academy, everybody has a special power.
Everybody got powers now.
You're like, and then you're sitting there like,
there's a part, was there a part of it that's like, my people, this is great. I have creative peers now.
It took me a while because I was prideful. Because you work so long to build the sandcastle of reputation. Seriously. And then when you get to college, it washes away. Like, you come up there with your sandcastle, like, hey, guys, this is what I'm about. This is what I do. And then the next dude in the next room is killing. Much better than you. And he's in your grade. Sandcastle gone. So now you work. Now you're in college and you're like, man, I don't even know if I want to do this anymore.
So you had a moment
every,
where you were
every
like,
year.
Really?
Every year. Because the work ethic I've come to know was one of like drums, and it wasn't multidimensional. When I got to college, it was kind of like time management, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Grades, even more heightened grades, scholarships, mm-hmm. and then it's a performing arts school. So right. not only do you
what
have to make grades,
to?
University of the Arts.
Okay.
You got to make grades, but you have to also perform.
Mm.
And if you know anything about that, performance is like put up or shut up. Like at the end of the year, you have this thing called a jury. And you sit in front of your faculty, your like the people who run like the drum department. You sit in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And all year long, you're supposed to be working on what they want you to work on so you can pass to the next grade.
Mm-hmm.
I failed my freshman jury.
What does that mean when you fail?
That means you got to take it over again. Or you won't advance.
Wow.
In a certain department because your major is drums.
Mm.
Yo, it was so bad that one of the drum teachers stood up and looked outside the window while I was playing. But that moment right there was kind of like, well, you got to humble yourself.
Hmm. Now, was humility an issue? Do you think that was holding you back? Was pride holding you back from your potential?
You know what? I don't know. I think it was more so like this newfound laziness.
Hmm.
Because when I was in high school, in middle school, you know, your mom, very hands-on because you're at home. Make sure you get this done. Grades, get this done. You go to college.
Ain't none of that.
Not even an inkling of that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's telling you to wake up. Nobody's telling you to get this done. Nobody's calling your mom's home. So it became like.
So you just got a new dose of freedom. You was like, man, I'll handle it when I handle it.
Right. And it all caught up with me.
Right.
And that spun out of control. And that led to an even kind of a moment of me actually receiving Christ over again, which was pretty interesting my freshman year.
Explain that to me.
So, I always went to church.
Mm-hmm.
I always was there. I was involved. I always believed.
Mm-hmm.
Freshman year, this newfound freedom actually was the thing that kind of destroyed me.
Okay.
I mean, up all night, doing what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
No rules. It's like, what is this? This is air?
Like, I've never been here before.
You mean I can be out late and not go to an 8:30 class?
Yeah, that's hard for a lot of people.
Right, and just do what I want to do?
Yeah.
Like, it's essentially being 18 and people are putting Ferrari keys in your hands.
Mm. I get that analogy.
But your parents paid for them.
Yeah. Your parents paid for college?
Yeah. My dad, he left like a fund.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't really have a sense of like,
I work for this.
Right. It's just kind of like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
So what happened was the more freedom I took as freedom, the more I kind of just fell away from God.
Mm-hmm.
Until one day I was like rock bottom.
Right.
And I was like, well, I'm failing everything.
You know, use prodigal son moment.
Prodigal son. He's when like, I came to myself,
picked my head up and said, "Wait a minute."
Feeling everything, and this will kind of foreshadow a story that we'll get into, especially talking about anchors.
Mm-hmm.
But I dealt with suicidal bouts then too, my freshman year. And I heard a voice, man. I've never heard the voice of God. Not that I can remember. It said, stop running. Stop running. I'm looking around in my room. I live in a studio. There's nobody there.
What am I looking for?
Right. The TV's off. Mm-hmm. I had a flip phone. iPhones wasn't around. You know?
Wasn't no Siri involved.
Wasn't no Siri involved. And I'm like, what in the world is this? Mm-hmm. Just stop running. I said, okay, God, I'll stop running. And then from that point forward, you know, my life slowly began to change. Of not just going to church and believing, but actually believing and doing for myself. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, it shaped me my freshman year. Of kind of like, this is how far I can go without God. I never knew how far I could go without God because I was always present before him because of my home lifestyle.
The regiment. Got you.
And when the regiment
was... That was made for you by mom.
Right. When the regiment got taken away, then it was kind of like, well, I always believed.
Sure.
And then it was kind of like, boom. What just happened? And it happened in one semester, which blew my mind.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, sin can happen. It can take you here this quick. Because I wanted to live this life.
What life?
The freshman life. The college right. life. Come on, man. Yeah. Like, everybody wants to live that life. Mm-hmm. It's heightened in movies.
Yeah.
Magazines. Your friends talk about it. It's like, when you get to college, it's almost like a rite of passage to sin.
Right. It's like you get to.
You hear old heads. Yeah. You hear old heads in church talking about, well, you know. You know, you laugh because you know what I'm talking about. Old heads in church talking about, hey, no, that's the time. You're going to enjoy yourself.
You're going to do it.
Yeah, you never get a time like that.
You only do it once.
You hear stuff like that. Uh-huh. You hear, and then when you hear somebody say, oh, you got to withstand all that stuff, you're like, nah, man, I'm trying to live. Because we all want this story. We all want to have the story of like, man, last night was crazy. To be a part of something.
Right.
Just to feel like you're a part of something that you can't remember because you blacked out.
Right, right.
But I saw how quickly that life leads you down the wrong road and try to take my life. So I was like, well, Lord, I'm going to stop running. Like, I'm yours.
Wow. And that, well, first of all, that's heavy. And I appreciate, I mean, it takes a lot of courage to share a story like that, because we definitely live in a time period where people are putting their best foot forward at all times.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
right.
I appreciate your transparency, because that's one of the things that I wanted this podcast to be, because anyone can go on iTunes and type in Ode to Omni.
Right.
And they'll hear the music and they'll go, wow, this is amazing. And one of the analogies I've been using when talking about the Beautiful Struggle podcast is, it's like comic books. I'm a big comic book fan. You know, you see the comic book character and you see this finished version.
Right.
You see this finalized Batman swoops in, knocks out the bad guys, locks the Joker up in Arkham Asylum, and then swoops away. But you don't really hear the origin story.
Right.
You know,
with
current artists, because one, they don't have an opportunity to tell it.
And nobody wants to hear it.
And no one really wants to hear it. But I found there's so much encouragement in people telling those stories.
Right.
And it takes a lot of courage for you to come out and say that for other people to hear it. But I do think people will be encouraged by it, because I'm sure that you're not the only person who's experienced that.
Right.
And I'm sure you're not the only person who will be able to learn from that now that you've shared it. Hopefully someone else will hear this, whether it be now or days, weeks, months, years from now, and be able to go,
yeah,
I'm heading down that path, or I was down that path and there's hope for me. You know what I mean?
Right.
Even the whole idea of like, am I no good now?
Right.
Because I messed up. Am I worthless? Am I incapable of doing anything good?
Exactly.
You know, and even the thing of like, I struggled, I got better, and now I've struggled again. You know what I mean? This whole idea of like, I'll never struggle again once I've passed that point.
Right, right. Which is, for me, that's so great that you say that, man. For me, when I went full in for Jesus, consciously,
right,
it was like, I'm going to do this till the wheels fall off.
Right.
And I'm still like that. But it was to the extreme. because I deal with OCD.
Mm.
So grace is nowhere to be found in OCD.
Tell me, explain.
OCD, it's a monster. It's a mental illness, but some people have it like where they have to have certain things in a certain place.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have like obsessive thoughts about things that, you know, maybe they can't control, or fear that's irrational, but your body is telling you that it's real.
Right.
And then there was me. Like, OCD doesn't respect anything. It'll latch on to anything. Relationships, religion, mm-hmm. Your emotions. It'll make you doubt the very thing that you know is true.
Mm.
So for me, I knew about grace. I knew about forgiveness.
Mm.
I knew about Christ. Believe it. But when I messed up, it was almost like I had to bear the weight of my sin myself, because I was like, Lord, I ask for forgiveness, but I don't I don't feel forgiveness, and why would you?
Right.
And I'm just a waste. It was almost like being in a minor depression every time I messed up.
Mm. Well, that sounds consistent, because we mess up every day.
Right. So it was an everyday thing. It got so bad, though, that every time I messed up and I was conscious of it, I would fast the next day.
Mm.
As if I was doing something for atonement.
Right.
But it was already made for me. Like.
Right.
But in my mind, I wanted to show God, like, I'm so sorry.
Right.
That I will give up anything to make this right.
Yeah.
But the thing is, once you put that pressure on yourself, OCD is like a recurring loop.
Mm-hmm.
It just keeps playing in your mind over and over and over. So you're like, God, I don't want to mess up in this situation. I don't want to mess up in this situation. Your mind is always on it. It's not on grace.
Right.
Your mind is just on the situation. What do? You mess up in the situation.
Right.
Because your mind is not on grace. Your mind is on the situation.
Right.
So that what kind of led to me kind of like, well, am I worth it?
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing? Like, what is this all about?
Right.
And I struggled with that for years. Years throughout college. I've been out of college for 4 years, and I still struggle with it. And I just realized, I just found out what it was that I struggled with. It wasn't that I struggle with grace. I struggle with OCD.
So all this time, you're living your life, you're doing this stuff,
right.
You're making this music, you're in college, you get out of college,
mm-hmm.
and you're struggling with this reoccurring bouts with OCD this whole time.
This whole time.
And not OCD like, oh, you're OCD, kind of like,
right,
kinda
right.
like a pop culture throwing the word around.
Right.
But like, you actually have been diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder.
Right. And the crazy thing is, I was just diagnosed in December.
But you've been dealing with this whole time.
For years.
Which is crazy to me to see how one can be capable of doing these amazing things and making this great stuff. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that things are going to be all good and that nothing's going to be wrong.
Right.
You know what I mean? But at the same time, the encouragement being, just because you're going through this doesn't mean you're not capable of doing great things.
Right.
Amazing things.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And that's what I struggled with kind of recording the last project.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was the first project called?
First project was called October's Fire.
Okay.
And that
was... What's that song I like? The long one?
Fighting Through It.
Fighting Through It.
And that was actually a tribute to my mother.
Really?
Right. Because she had that, you know, tenacious attitude of whatever it is, she's going to fight through it. So that song's actually dedicated to her.
Mm. That's my favorite song on that, on the first album, Fighting Through It.
Thank you. So October's Fire was interesting because, so going back to the sandcastle real quick. So I built another 4 years in college, sandcastle.
Ah.
Got a reputation.
Like, watch this.
Right. And then, you know, in college.
They get low to me.
Right. Right. In college, they build you up.
Mm-hmm.
You can be whatever you want to be. The world is yours. You have a celebration. Yeah, cookouts.
Yeah.
Multiple cookouts. You getting fat. But you're enjoying this time, and that summer is the best summer of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't got a job, but that summer is the best summer of your life.
Right.
Because you just finished something most people don't finish.
Right.
So, that fall, my wrist broke.
What?
Right.
What?
That fall. And for all my friends.
Again,
they,
ladies and gentlemen, this is stuff I don't know.
Yeah.
This, your wrist broke?
Yeah. This is, my friends know the real
that
story.
That has got to be.
Right.
The most devastating thing.
Right. So my wrist broke because of an accident. But the craziest thing is, well, let me tell the accident. Let me, let's be full out here.
Okay.
I don't like dogs. Okay. Let's start there.
Hey, look, you can't take it out on all dogs.
Look, man, they need to be chained up. I was walking, right? There's leaves on the ground, October.
Set the scene for him.
Set the scene. Walking up the street. About to go play basketball, right? Do work.
Right. Give these people some work out here.
That's right. Car pulls up in the driveway, across the street from me. Yeah. I see. Okay. Front door opens up. Passenger door opens up. You know, back passenger door opens up. So, okay. Somebody walks around, opens the back door, back left door.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, that's nice. They're getting home. That's nice. I saw a dog hop out.
Right.
Now, I'm cool at this time. I'm cool because there's some distance between me and the dog.
Right. If you got to make a quick move, you got time to make a move.
If I got to hop over this fence, I can hop over this fence.
Right.
Step all over my knee of the wrist of tulips. That's all right.
Because I'm short, but imagine.
I'm short when that adrenaline kicks in, I'm out. So the dog comes out. I look. Hanging. Being a good dog. I looked again. Split second. Dog is coming straight towards me. Full speed. Now, at this time, I'm like, okay. Panic.
Fight or flight.
Right. I'm in the flight all the way. So I back up, back pedal. Like, I try to back up. No, it's leaves on the ground. I slipped. I try to brace myself. Fell. Okay. Threw the ball in the air. My Beats all over the place. iPhone on the ground. The owners come over. Oh, we're so sorry. We're so sorry. I said, oh, no problem, man. No problem.
What happened with the dog?
The dog went for the ball. The dog wasn't really going for me, I don't think. But I don't know if it touched me, but it was lunging towards me. And when I threw the ball away, it kind of like got distracted. Could have lost my life that day. But fellow Morris, they picked me up. They're very gracious. Are you all right? All right? Yeah, I'm all right. I start walking, laughing, you know, like, man, right. I'm crazy. I got a sharp pain in my wrist. I'm like, man, this doesn't feel great. So I'm like, I'm still going to play ball. I'm going to shake this off. As I'm walking, my wrist starts to throb. So I go home.
You ball?
No, I go home. I turn around.
Okay, I was about to say.
No, I go home. My mom's like, what's wrong? Because you see me with an ice pack. Because I had a gig that week.
Right.
I'm like, I'm all right. I just fell. I just took ibuprofen. My wrist is broke. Takes me to the hospital. Go see a specialist. Now, this is the irony of it. This is. I don't know if this is God being funny. The doctor's emergency room is 6 weeks. I'm like, all right, cool. I can do 6 weeks.
Right.
Went to a specialist. He said, what? He didn't even look at me. He put my x-rays up. He said, what do you do? I said, I play drums. He said, oh, yeah, surgery. Like, you got to have surgery.
Right.
Had surgery. Couldn't play drums for 2.5 months.
How was that?
Identity crisis.
Really?
4 years I was identified with, I play drums.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do.
This is right out of college.
Fresh out of college. The world is my oyster.
They about to get all this work.
All of it.
Until Fido came through.
Until Fido came through. Broke my dreams. But I broke my wrist. And the cool thing is, October's Fire, I didn't have really any of the music written for that album. Ode to Omni wasn't even a thought. My wrist broke. I couldn't play music, so I started to write. And then I had this, like, whole King Nebuchadnezzar vibe of, like, okay, you were a king. Now you in the forest.
I did not know this.
Right. Now you're in the forest running rampant. And you can't do anything about it.
Mm.
So if you happen to lose a limb, God forbid, who are you?
Wow. Wow.
And yeah. That's why I named that the album October's Fire. Because it was purified.
Hmm.
And it happened in October.
See? Look at that.
That's why I named it that. And
see, that was your moment to shout right there. If y'all
you
was
missed
listening.
It. You
see,
missed
it. It's gone now. You keep listening to the podcast.
Yeah, rewind
you
it back.
If you didn't take your run, you can't do it now because there's more to listen to.
Right.
But wow, I did not know that. That's powerful.
Right. And there wasn't even a band at that point. So I just called a couple guys together. I said, can you play my music for me?
So you're writing all the parts?
All the parts. Just sitting there, can't really do anything else.
Did you think you'd ever play again?
I would play because the doctor said I would play.
Okay.
But this is the humbling part. I got to play on Christmas Day, which was on that Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas Day was on Sunday. We had church. That's the first day I got to play. It was a gift.
Mm.
And my perspective was so different.
Wow.
So different. And the craziest thing is, I never got back to 100% mobility in my wrist.
Mm.
It's a constant reminder.
Wow.
It's a constant reminder to me. Like, there's some things I struggle to do with that I used to do with ease.
Mm.
And it's a constant reminder of, like, this is where you used to be.
Mm.
So I was like, wow, Lord, that's pretty heavy. So, you know, I write these songs that mean that meant a lot to me and that still mean a lot to me. In the summer, I recorded. And then I released it shortly, I think maybe a year and a half later.
Wow. And that leads us up to Anchors.
Anchors, which just got released not too long ago.
Yeah. When did that come out?
February 17th, 2015.
Okay. So it's on iTunes?
On iTunes.
Is it on Spotify?
I don't know. It should be.
Ought to be.
It ought to be. I mean, it got it the distribution deal. It should go to Spotify, but whether it's up or not right now, I'm not too sure. So buy the record.
Yeah, go get that. Go grab that. No, so what was the inspiration behind Anchors?
Anchors was interesting. Anchors was different because I wrote Anchors. I wrote the title track in Europe as I was blessed to play with this band called Riley, and I'm so blessed to play with them. And while we were overseas, one of the band members. His family, his daughter got sick. 1-year-old daughter got sick.
mm-hmm.
And life or death situation. So I'm just there and I'm like, man, this is crazy. Like, we're in the middle of a tour, European tour. We have dates to fulfill. Is he going to come, fulfill the rest of the dates, or is he going to just, you know, be with his family? So obviously, that's important. So I said, the mom stays back in Switzerland with the daughter.
Mm.
He goes on the road. So I'm watching him night after night. Encouraging and employing people to worship.
Right.
While your daughter is in a completely different country with your wife.
Mm.
And you don't know maybe what her prognosis is right now.
Right. That's heavy.
Heavy. Everything's different. I mean, if emergency happened here right now, we have a good mind to be like, oh, there's a hospital nearby.
Right.
Who people speak English and they're going to accept our insurance.
Right.
No brainer.
Mm.
In Europe, everything is not what you think it is. It's like, insurance ain't international.
Mm-hmm.
Money, currency, got to do that whole thing. Language,
yeah.
That can be a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
And then now your wife is separated while you keep on traveling.
Right.
So I just thought, like, I was moved. And I was like, man, they have to have something more than just the American dream or what so many people live for.
Mm.
You have to have an anchor.
Right.
You have to. No amount of money. Nothing in that moment could help.
Mm.
Nothing material could help. It's impossible almost. And that's what people strive for. People would think, like, if I only had a better degree, better job,
this relationship,
right,
this thing,
life would be better.
Yeah. Not that things are bad.
Right. It just would be better. If you had those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that's your perspective. Mm-hmm. And like you said, things are not bad. I mean, material things are not bad. But when you're using them as the thing that keeps you grounded, then it's misused.
Right. This is the thing that I'm expecting to hold me up or hold me down when the storms come.
Right. Right. And unfortunately,
so it's the power that you give that thing or the faith you put in that thing.
Right.
Not necessarily that things are bad.
Right. Right. So unfortunately, we've seen it firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
Stock market crash.
Mm-hmm.
People in New York jumping outside of windows.
Right.
Outside of windows because that faith that they put in money has now just disappeared.
Yeah.
What do you do when the bottom drops out?
Mm.
And that's what that song was about. I wrote that song in 2013 or 14 or something like that. 14.
What song is this?
Anchors.
Anchors. The title track.
Right. Recorded the song. We had a live recording in December.
Mm.
That year later, I finally found out that next December that I was diagnosed with OCD.
Mm-hmm.
Like, serious, you know?
Right.
And I was having moments of, like, going to the hospital. I had a nervous breakdown. Couldn't sleep. Couldn't eat. I'm like, Lord, this is crazy.
Mm.
Like, what are we going to do about this?
Right.
And the song Anchors in the project meant something to me, but it didn't mean that much like October's Fire.
Right. You couldn't place it at the time of making it.
Right. Right. And then, so a song that I wrote a year and a half ago about actually, like, reminded me of what needs to be anchoring me in these moments.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like I was foreshadowing or writing a piece of my deliverance a year and a half before I needed it.
Yeah. Wow.
So I had this, like, tough ordeal November, December 2014. I mean, I was in the thick of it, in the throes of the ocean, like, in the thick of it. Like, having thoughts, intrusive thoughts that I can't control towards God that are blasphemy.
Mm-hmm.
That's blasphemous.
Right.
And for a Christian, that's like, my gosh.
What?
Right.
That's the worst of the worst.
But now you can't control it.
Mm.
And then your mind is telling you something completely different, and it won't stop. So now I got to the point of, what's the point of living?
Mm.
If the main thing that I love, I'm cursing, and I'm going to hell, what's the point of living?
Mm-hmm.
My mind is telling me that.
Right.
God is not telling me that. So I get the help I need. I start seeing a therapist, have my family around me, girlfriend around me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's one night before the release concert.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in my room, got Spotify up. And I'm like, Lord, I'm having a moment. I just need to see what you want to say to me.
Right.
I'll flip the book up. It talks about grace. Right. And I'm reading this thing when Paul, I believe it was Paul, but how Paul was just saying, like, three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me.
Mm.
And he said, my grace is sufficient.
Right.
And I'm like, what did Paul deal with?
Yeah.
If he asks for God to take it away three times.
Yeah.
And how powerful is God's grace if he just says, my grace is sufficient?
God didn't say, hold on.
Right.
He didn't say later. He said, you got enough.
Right. Right.
The grace that I've given you is enough.
Right. And at that moment, I'm in my room. And bro, my computer is locked. It's playing Spotify. Out of nowhere, in the middle of the song, I asked God a question. I said, God, are you trying to teach me about grace?
Mm.
The song stops. Another song starts playing that talks about grace. I did not touch my computer.
It wasn't a commercial.
It wasn't a commercial. It wasn't on shuffle.
Uh-huh.
I'm still amazed to this day that that happened.
Mm.
Now, mind you, the song I'm listening to is like four songs below. This song stops in the middle of the song goes four songs above and starts playing the song as soon as I ask that question.
Mm.
About your grace.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, I get it. I guess you're telling me about right. grace. And the minute my mom said two things, she said one thing to me. She said, Marcus, you don't have to be perfect. Because that's what people deal with OCD.
Mm-hmm.
And when I knew, when I relearned or learned about God's grace,
yeah,
I was like, you mean I can be free?
Mm.
You mean there's this pasture I can roll around in? Like, you mean tell me I can make mistakes and it be okay?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean I love God less.
Mm.
You mean to tell me I'm covered no matter what? And that was new life in itself.
Mm-hmm.
That was something OCD could not make me doubt.
Wow. Wow.
Couldn't make me doubt. And OCD is a mental, like, illness. It's like something in your brain is misfiring.
Mm-hmm.
So it plays tricks on you all the time. But when that came about, it was like, when they say God's word is like sharper than any two-edged sword, that's true. Because my life changed when I read that scripture.
Wow. How so?
It changed because I became more relaxed.
Mm. So the truth.
The truth made me relaxed.
Became real.
Came real. And I'm like, and this is crazy because it's like 2 weeks away. It's like Super Bowl Sunday. So it's like 3 weeks away from the release concert. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Lord, I don't understand why I'm going through all this, man.
Right.
It's just grace. I'm like, you want me to tell people about grace? Yeah.
So do you feel like you went through that just so you would have a story to tell for others? You think that's part of the reason why?
Oh, it's, yeah, that's definitely one of the reasons. And the other reasons is because I believe, just as aggressive my OCD is, God is more aggressive of getting me free from that OCD.
I'm not going to cry in here today. Okay?
By any means necessary.
We're not going to do, you're not going to have right. any tears on the mic.
Right. And I'm not trying to do that. But I thought about that.
Uh-huh.
This is a person that came down from heaven, aggressively saved mankind.
Mm.
Aggressively. Like, we like to think of Jesus' love. He definitely is. But it's an aggressive love.
Mm.
He conquered death. Sin and death. Conqueror. That's aggressive.
Yeah.
And failing wasn't an option.
Right.
At all. Even the way he spoke, I am that I am, sent me.
Mm-hmm.
It's aggressive. I love you, but this is aggressive.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, God, like, why would you let this happen? He didn't let the OCD happen. OCD and other illnesses, unfortunately, until we go to heaven, it's all sin. It's all death. Sin goes deeper than we could even imagine. We were never meant to die. Sin got introduced. Now man has a time limit on his life. That's what it is. So things get distorted. So I'm like, this is crazy that I'm dealing with this distorted thing in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of, well, just as aggressive my OCD is, God is more aggressive getting me out of it.
Mm. His love for you, his grace,
it's crazy.
His mercy.
It's absolutely crazy because I have days, and I still have days where I'm like, Lord, really? Why?
Yeah.
I said to God, I said this to Jesus, not in a disrespectful way. I had said this with my head down, and I said, you didn't die for this? Why would you die for this?
Talking about yourself.
Myself. Why would you die for someone like me who can't control his thoughts? Who's having nervous breakdowns? Like, who's doubting you but doesn't want to doubt you?
Mm.
Why would you do that? And it's just the aggressive love. Like, my condition and God's love should not even be in the same category.
His love is that much greater.
And if you pay attention to it, he loves you out of conditions.
What, say, how do you mean?
For example, God could easily be like, Marcus, I'm done with you. Right. God could easily be like, Marcus, I'm going to heal you. Miraculous. Mm-hmm. But yet, he's letting me see his love through this.
Mm.
Right? He's letting me see the fullness of OCD.
You get to see an angle of his love.
Right.
Because you have OCD.
Because I have it. So because I have this condition, God is saying, I'm going to love you out of the condition. Nothing about my love is conditional.
Mm.
Nothing about my love needs you to work for it.
Mm-hmm.
You have this condition. You are struggling.
And I'm committed.
And I am committed. And my love will prevail over your condition. That blew my mind.
Mm.
When he allowed me to see that, like, what? Like, what are you saying right now?
Right.
And that's what I think anchors is. It's just, we all have conditions. Some of us are tethered up to the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people that were in that room that night on the release concert.
Right.
One out of two of them are suffering with something.
Right.
And a lot of people, and unfortunately, think, when you think about God, there's a false picture of, man, I got to get it together. Yeah. I think a lot of people don't want to acknowledge God because they realize who they are.
They see that they're messy and they acknowledge that.
Right.
God ain't.
God ain't.
Feel like, how can we possibly be in the same room? I'll burn up.
Right. Right.
Which there's a certain amount of, like,
it's heavy. It's real.
You know
real.
What I mean? Like, God is holy, and he's not like he's cool with it.
Right. He's not cool with sin.
You know, it's not like, oh, it's all good. No, don't worry about it.
Yeah. But that's the whole point of Christ.
Yeah.
And I was trying to tell
people. He bridges that gap.
Man.
Because the gap that you feel is real.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real, mm-hmm. God's not cool. It's not like, oh, it's all good. No, it ain't all good.
Mm-mm.
We do have beef.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Me and you do have a problem.
Right.
But Jesus.
But.
But Jesus. Huh? But God. Come on now.
Right.
No, but seriously. But Jesus.
Right.
His death.
Right.
In your place.
I still don't get it.
Yeah.
And it's, for God so loved the world that he gave. God so loved the world, minus it doesn't care about the conditions. Like, it's even in Romans, while we were yet sinners, Christ still died for us.
And that is, and if you're struggling with this concept, it's a hard thing to swallow. When you're aware of your mess,
mm-hmm.
When you stop saying, no, I'm not that bad, when you actually start to see how bad you are, and you actually start to see your mess, and I'm not saying, and please don't hear me say, you're not capable of doing good things.
Right, right.
You're not capable of performing positive things. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, when you really start to kind of like, I'm a mess. Yeah, I got issues. I got problems, you know?
Right.
Like, whatever your particular situation is, it is kind of hard to go, well, dang, why would anybody, you know, why would anybody come for me? Why would anybody look out for me? And it's like, Jesus is like, I love you. Because I choose to.
Right.
Done.
Right. Right.
I mean, one of the things that always gets me at my church during praise and worship is the line that says, he sees the depths of my heart and he loves me the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, that's the one. They'd be like, you see the depths? You see, like, the part that I don't even want to look at, and you're like, I'll take him.
Right.
Huh? Not, oh, he's good, I'll take him. It's like,
right.
Your ability to perform is not it.
I think that's the thing that bothered me. That's the thing I couldn't get.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, I'm always to the point where I've never had a father, so God is my father.
Right.
So I'm like, I'm
with you. I'm in the same spot.
Right.
See where you're going.
It's like, Daddy, I want to prove to you. Right. I want to make you proud.
I want you to be proud of me.
I want you to look down and smile with all your heart and just be like, that's my boy.
Right.
from you.
Yeah.
And when you don't do that, when you drop the ball, you feel it even more. Like
you feel like he's like, wow, this ball here.
Right. And really, he's just kind of like, he's like Jesus. He's like, already, Jesus got it.
Yeah, like, the you know, because they're, like, all the wrath is gone. All I got for you is love. And this is, and this spot, that place is kind of what Anchors came out of.
Mm-hmm. It came out of being tossed in a violent sea.
Mm.
This time the violent sea was me. It was in my mind.
Mm.
And God, Jesus still saying, I'm still way at the bottom anchoring you.
Wow, we're going to tell people how to get the tissues on episode number two. get your box of Kleenex. I'm going to have to put that in the credits when you listen to this one. Make sure you got your Kleenex ready.
No, but seriously.
So let me ask you the same question I asked on episode one, mm-hmm. the final question as we're wrapping up.
Mm-hmm.
What, like, for Bear Fruit, our slogan is Believe, Create, Inspire, which basically stands for take what you believe, create something, and inspire your circle of influence. So out of all the stuff you've shared and out of all the things you've created, when it's all said and done and you leave a legacy behind, what do you want to inspire your circle of influence? Where do you want to push them? Where do you want to encourage them, prod them? What do you want to leave them with? When they look back at your body of work as a creative and what you've done as a human being.
Right.
Where do you want, how do you want to inspire people?
That's such a heavy question, man.
That's why I leave it for the end.
Right. Oh. I want to leave, whether it be an example or audibly, you know, audibly stored or, you know, tracked. I just want people to see my heart. And I hate to be cliche about it.
It's your answer.
And that's, what I mean by that, I want them to see a Christian who openly struggled.
Mm.
I want them to see through my lyrics, through my life, through interviews, I want them to see just how great God is by my struggle.
Mm.
I don't want to put a cropped and edit and filtered photo before people.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I'm realizing is that people respond based off of genuineness and experiences.
Mm.
For sure. Like, people buy things because they want an experience.
Mm.
People go to games because they want an experience. Our whole lives, we're looking for this experience.
Right.
My legacy is, I want the experience that people could have. I want that to be channeled through my life so they can look and say, you know what Marcus did with Odin Omni in his life? Undoubtedly, there's a God.
Mm.
There is no, when I go listen to their albums, when I saw them in concert, there was something in the room, at a bar, in a stadium. There was something undeniable about the presence of what I felt, that I had an experience. That, and also on top of that experience, I've got to see and hear and learn about his life in grace.
Mm.
I want my legacy, to be that I am just a messenger. And I bring the presence of God with me wherever I'm playing, that the atmosphere, people who don't believe can just step in and just from a distance and say, whatever he has, whatever I'm feeling, I want that.
Right.
Because the thing is, I can say that I want to leave, like, my name in the charts, or, you know, my name, like, I want my albums to do this.
Right.
But honestly, the only thing that's really long-lasting, that is long-lasting, is Christ. So if I can leave a imprint of, like, an undeniable experience that is not boxed in by church, that is not your regular church service. Somebody came to the concert and they said, you know what that felt like to me? It's like, it felt like church in the 21st century. It felt like what we want, like worship in a different way. And I think, for real, we're in this era of another great revival. I want people to look back at my life and say, that dude ushered a great revival. The next wave in America that made Americans or international people conscious about a living, breathing God. Because it's bigger than me. And we all know that America, or people in general, we need another revival. We need a mass sweeping of God is real. We need the experience. And if I can give that to people with my life, where they can look back and say, this band was a part of that movement.
Right.
I'm cool.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm cool.
That's, well, dang, that's heavy. I mean, listen, man, I really appreciate you coming on. I really appreciate your genuine honesty and transparency.
Thanks, bro.
This has been fantastic. Like, I really hope that, you know, the folks out there that are listening, that you're enjoying this, that you're getting something out of it. And I think this wraps up episode number 2.
Wow. Dose.
Of Beautiful Struggle Podcast. Marcus, why don't you tell the people where they can find you on the internets?
My crib. No, I'm joking. You can find me.
Don't give
me
your address.
Right.
They might show up. Be like, yo, man, can I get a CD? No, you may not.
Ode to Omni. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, our website, iTunes, Ode to Omni, SoundCloud, Ode to Omni. It's all the same. ODETOOMNI. Ode to Omni. And if you type that in, that's a peculiar name in itself. You'll find something. You'll find something, whether it's YouTube, you know, whatever. Anchors is out right now. Best work, some of our best work to date, I will say, quite honestly, in a humble way. But that's it.
I'm just going to be humble and say it's the best thing we've ever done.
Okay.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
I say, all right.
He's like, you right. We did kill it on that, Joe. Do you have a personal Twitter or anything like that? Or is it all Omni?
I try to stay off that stuff.
Okay. All right. You know what I mean? Well, I got one. Look here. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it is at @DOC_OCK_BF. Also follow Barefruit's Twitter. That's at @B3ARFRUIT. And if you like this podcast, leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes and a positive comment. And
no lower.
Share. What do you say?
No lower.
Nah,
five.
Leave a 5 and leave that positive comment. But also, man, no, man, if you like it, share it with some people, pass it around. Hope you guys are enjoying it, because I'm enjoying doing it. So until next time, peace.